Jerry, thank you for having us on your show again tonight. We are live right now at the El Paso International Airport in El Paso, Texas, where a group of UFO researchers has gathered together for the Border Zone International UFO Festival, the first ever, first of its kind. It's a it's an event that's going to bring together a series of lectures and other festivities going on along the border, Rio Grande River, between Texas and Mexico. And it's actually a little bit down from, it's about 3 hours away from El Paso, but El Paso is the nearest major airport, so that's why we've all gathered here. And in a little bit, when we conclude these interviews, we will be heading on down the road, down the interstate toward Presidio, Texas. And I've got with me now Stanton Friedman. And, of course, everybody on your show knows Stan, and he's also a frequent guest on your program. And Stan is down here to give two lectures. He's our keynote speaker at the Border Zone International UFO Festival, which begins, by the way, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock Central Time. We've got kind of an informal kickoff event tonight, which we'll talk about more a little bit later. We're going to have an experiment involving the use of lasers on an age-old phenomenon that occurs in Marfa, Texas, known as the Marfa Lights, these strange orbs of light that we talked about on your show, Jerry, the other night. We're going to be shining a Class 4 blue laser at them and watching their reactions. Now, this is a repeat of a similar experiment carried out a few months back, and there was a definite reaction the instant that that laser made contact with those mysterious orbs. But in the meantime, as I said, I've got Stanton Friedman here sitting next to me, and first of all, I'm going to put him on right now and just have him share some of his thoughts on what's going on in the field of UFO investigations and some of the latest information. If you'll just bear with me a second here, and we'll get him on.
Jerry?
Yes.
Ah, good. Glad to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you, Stan. So you're in El Paso, huh?
I'm in El Paso. Three flights from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. Got picked up at 4:30 this morning my time, which was 1:30 El Paso time. So it's been a long day.
And are you going to still try to get by and see the Marfa lights, or are you going to go in and on into the hotel and get some rest?
Well, we're going to try to do both. I don't have.
Well, hey, I congratulate you for stamina. I don't know that I could do that.
Hey, we old guys still have something left. You know that. You know, I tell people as long as I'm healthy, I'll do what I'm doing, and the fact that I'm 78 isn't going to get in the way.
Well, you're a little ahead of me, but you know, I always marvel, Stan. You've been just about any place that anything happens that's of importance as far as conferences, you've been there. I guess that's kind of a mission for you. You've always been open to these conferences.
Well, yeah, and sometimes it's a long way. In December, I'm going to be down in Iguazu Falls in Brazil for the fourth World UFO Conference or something to that effect. I was there in Brazil last year for a conference, and I've been there several times before. They're having people coming from a bunch of countries. I'm looking forward to that, and I'll be speaking in Laredo in Texas here in a couple of weeks on the 10th, 12th, something like that, 10th. And I'll be, I've already been this year. I was in Atlanta for a conference. I was in New Hampshire for the second annual Betty and Barney Hill Recognition Conference with Kathleen Marden, who's Betty's niece. And I've got more. Oh, I'll be at the International UFO conference in Phoenix at the end of February.
So you got a full schedule.
I still have a full schedule, and the local paper carried some comments I meant. I'm speaking in my hometown, Fredericton, New Brunswick, on the 24th of October, and I commented about the utterly foolish things that the British Astronomer Royal said, but only kooks see UFOs, which was a really dumb thing to say. It's not surprising. He has previously expressed his lack of knowledge of UFOs before, but it irks me when somebody takes advantage of his position, his status, British Astronomer Royal, after all, to say something without having looked at any of the evidence, any of the data. NARCAP has over 1,000 pilot sightings. I take it he will never fly because he's afraid some kook might be at the controls of the airplane. J. Allen Hynek's book about UFOs has sightings by astronomers. Dr. Peter Sturrock did a survey of members of the American Astronomical Society. 5% of them were willing to own up to having seen one, even though they didn't want to talk about it publicly, which is a big problem here. So there's a lot of nonsense floating around from the...
Stan, you're going to touch on that a little bit about astronomers and science and the facts about everything with your speech either Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
I'm going to be talking about man's place in the universe, and I will include some choice, stupid comments by astronomers. Some of these are covered in my book, Science Was Wrong, again with Kathleen Marden. The British Astronomer Royal saying space travel is utter bilge a year before Sputnik went up. What good would it do? Who's going to pay for it? He said, what we need to do is buy good instruments for astronomers. And of course, space travel has proceeded, and the science that's benefited the most from it is astronomy. You know, an utterly stupid thing to say. And there are a lot of these down the way. The trouble is that too many people, like the SETI community, you know, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. I say the real name is silly effort to investigate, because it's based on bad science. The notion that there are aliens out there, I don't doubt that, that are sending us messages using technology appropriate to us, for whom there have been long-distance radio messages for all of 111 years.
Wow.
That makes absolutely no sense at all. You know, when you think about it, unless you're buying into Pat Robertson's notion that the world was only created in 4004 B.C., so it hasn't been around very long, but if you say he left out six zeros and it was 4 billion before B.C., then you realize that it's utterly silly. I mean, I don't use a slide rule anymore. Why would astronomers out there, in the first place, why would they send us a message? If they can't get here, who cares? In the second place, why would they use technology appropriate to us? I don't understand the reasoning. But of course, the SETI community always says there is no evidence for UFOs. They never talk about the five large-scale scientific studies I talk about. Dr. Jill Tarter, a very smart lady. She was the model, you know, for the movie Contact.
Mm-hmm.
When she retired a couple of months ago from her position as looking for signals, but now she's just going to raise money to help the other guys look for signals, she said, you know, when you're so you can't stop when you're so close to such an earth-shattering event. Well, a couple of years ago, she said, they might be as close as 1,000 light years. And we could make contact, and they will help us solve our problems. You know, can you see the conversation? Hello out there, we've got some difficulty. 2,000 years later, they say, yeah, hey, what can we do for you? Well, here's our problem, and it's another 2,000 years before they get back. Does that make any sense? I mean, somebody's
got... Not really. What do you think that all this is about? Is it just get into the fundraising business, and they just want to keep on... staying existing, you know, in existence?
Well, yeah, there's another group that is fighting for its life by putting out nonsense. The warming global warming business. I've been looking at that. There's a chapter in my book, Science Was Wrong. And to call CO2 a pollutant is absurd in the first place. Every growing thing on the planet needs CO2. Every plant, that is, anyway. Secondly, the temperature of the Earth does vary, but there hasn't been any global warming for 16 years. We put out a lot of CO2 in that time. But, you know, they have a strong vested interest because they get research grants. They're in special positions all over the world, government-sponsored positions. And they say silly things, and the press pays attention to them. And they're the ones who accuse the people who say, hey, wait a minute, the emperor doesn't have any clothes in this situation either. Oh, they're all biased, you know, from the oil companies. I'm not getting this, any money from the oil companies. We've got lots of data. Yes, the Arctic is warm right now. They don't bother to tell you, oh, the Antarctic is colder than it's been in a while. So, you know, one gets disgusted with scientists who prostitute their profession for position, for money, for attention, instead of trying to see what's really going on the planet. So, you know, I have no reason not to speak out against these guys. I don't work for any of them. You know, my boss tells me it's okay. My boss is me. And what I find is they don't know anything. They haven't done their homework. It's like the Astronomer Royal saying, only kooks see UFOs. Where does that come from? How many books has he read? You know, how many astronomers has he talked to that have seen UFOs? That's a prostitution of a responsible position. And I don't like it, and I'm going to speak out about it.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons that you're respected so much in the communities, Stan, is the fact that you do speak your mind. And not only do you speak your mind, you also have a few facts. And well, as you say in some of your lectures, don't let the facts get in your way.
Well, my feeling very strongly is have facts in hand before putting mouth in gear. Should be the first rule for a scientist. And when I find that they haven't done their homework, then I'm disappointed.
So, Joe, we're going to take a break to do a TV
interview. Yeah, and you have a scientific background. Stan, it's going to be great down at that conference. You evidently are going to be down in South Texas a lot. You're coming back in a couple of weeks.
Coming back to Laredo. Yeah, well, at least I can fly to Laredo. I don't need to drive 4 hours from El Paso.
That's right. So, well, I understand that there's quite a few interesting things happening down there that are pretty mysterious. Yeah. And I'm not quite sure what to make of it. And I'm sure that... You, which I like to refer to as a man that just wants the facts, man, kind of a Jack Webb type guy. And what do you make of the things like the Marfa lights and some of the other incidents, the zone of silence down there, and the UFO crashes reported down in Mexico that Noe Torres has done some great work on, and Ruben Duarte?
Yeah. We're going to hear about that at this conference. And also, I should add, is a new book out by Scott and Suzanne Ramsey about the Aztec incident in March 1948. And everybody was dismissing that, including me at the beginning. And they have done such a tremendous job of research. It happened. Bodies were recovered. Wreckage was recovered. They found witnesses nobody else had talked to. They found the papers of the various people who were involved. It's very exciting. I mean, you know, it's a long time ago, but look, I'm still thinking about Roswell. That was 47, Aztec was 48. So, you know, there is work to be done, and what we need is people with courage enough to do it. And people can check out my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. See my books, see some of my strong comments, if you will. See where they can get autographed copies of the books and get DVDs and all this stuff. And this, you can buy the books on Amazon, of course, but you won't get my autograph from Amazon.
And that's one of the things, I know we're going to have to move on to some of the other guests here, but that's one of the things I've always been impressed with you, Stan Friedman, is the fact that you do take time to visit with people And I found out over the years that when you stand around and talk to people, some people have some pretty interesting stories to tell.
That's right. That's right. My leads have come out of, a lot of leads have come out of my media activities, inadvertent leads, stuff I didn't know about. That's how I got involved in Roswell.
Oh, I know. That's a great story. The TV manager there mentioned Jesse Marcel to you.
Yeah, I mean, changed my whole life in one simple sentence. So, and that was a long time ago, 78. You got to be out and about, and you got to be willing to put people at ease. If they don't want their name used, you've got to be willing to do that, too. It's unfortunate that the nasty, noisy negativists have held so much sway with the other media guys, but we're getting better. They're getting better, I guess. Maybe, you know, it's time for people to realize that with the Kepler space satellite turning up indications that there are perhaps 100 billion planets in our galaxy, only 100 billion, and what I'll be talking about in one of my talks is that we are not in the center of the universe. We're not the most advanced civilization. We're not in the middle of things as we used to think we were. And it's time to grow up and recognize we've got something to learn from the guys out there. And, you know, one of the crazy things, Jerry, is you'd think people would recognize that one reason for coming here would be recognition that soon we'll be able to go out there. Why do I say that? Because we have understood nuclear fusion. That's what makes the universe go around. All the stars produce their energy by nuclear fusion. And that's how we make big bombs. Not just little bigger than an old-fashioned bomb. The first big bomb, a 10-ton blockbuster in World War II, 1944, 10 tons of TNT that released, that's the energy. 1945, first A-bomb, 18,000 tons of TNT. 7 years later, 1952, our first H-bomb, Mike, 10 million tons of TNT, and the Russians let one off, 57 million tons of TNT. So if we decided to spend the money, we could go to the stars using nuclear fusion. Now, I'm not saying we should. A primitive society like ours certainly has no business going to visit someplace else when they can't even, nobody who goes can speak for the planet. But it's not a question of, do we know any possible source of energy? You listen to the astronomers, you think the only way to move any place is with a chemical rocket. We got nuclear-powered submarines. We got nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. They can operate for 18 years without refueling, Jerry. That's pretty remarkable.
Certainly is.
So we have to recognize that we've come a long way, mainly through industry and the national laboratories, not through your local university. Look, the stealth airplane built by Lockheed, only $10 billion in 10 years, not six professors and 20 grad students, obviously. So anyway, I will be talking about our place in the universe. I'll be showing pictures of nuclear fission rockets. I'll talk about nuclear fusion rockets. I'll show pictures of the rockets that operated. I don't mean something back of somebody's head. I worked on one. Great day when the thing ran. Only operated 1,100 megawatts. Los Alamos built one 4,400 megawatts. That's twice the power of Hoover Dam. That was back in the 60s, for goodness sakes. So, you know, people got to keep up with what's been going on.
And Stan, you do. You keep up with it, and you put it in a way where people can understand. And I always enjoy having you on.
Well,
and you're there, and I appreciate you taking time there at the El Paso airport with people moving around to talk to us. And we'll probably visit with you a little later in the show when you're down at the Marfa Lights.
Okay. Good show. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks very much.
Somebody, Noe wants to talk to you for a minute.
Yeah, this is Noe Torres, who's the moderator down there at the press conference. Noe, it's your turn. interestingly enough, NOAA has put this together with Brad Newton, and they've really put together a great conference, the Border Zone Conference,
Jerry,
which is going to be happening this weekend. NOAA, go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to try to hook up with you again when we get down to the Marfa Light viewing site. So
yes.
We'll try to connect. If we have an internet signal, we'll connect this way again. If not, we'll connect by phone, okay?
That's right. You got anybody else who wants to talk to us, or are they they're recuperating?
No. At the present time, we're about to go on with a television interview, so we'll be back with you when we get down to Marfa in a couple hours.
Okay.
Okay,
thanks very much. And, you know, the Jerry Pippin Show and, of course, Inception Radio Network, we're proud to be co-sponsors of this event. We'll talk to you later. Folks, stay tuned. We've got more coming up.